Hello everyone, this is Greg here and welcome to Just a Meme podcast, where we talk about the future of making money on the web. Today we have a really exciting guest, Casey from Ballet Rising joining us, and he's here to talk to us about kind of what the future holds for ballet in specifically and how people can monetize that on the web. So welcome, Casey.
Thanks. Yeah, great to be here.
So diving straight into the questions, tell us a bit about yourself. What has your journey been to this date? And yeah, keen to hear what you've got going on.
It's a long story, but I'll try and keep it a little bit shorter for everybody. So I'm originally from the United States, Salt Lake City, Utah. It's my jazz hat. I started doing ballet when I was about 10 years old. It was a sort of a crazy experience. Growing up in a place that's way more famous for skiing and cowboys than ballet dancers.
Yeah.
I was kind of a shy, introverted little kid. My mom was like, why don't you try ballet? And I was somehow very open-minded at the same time as well. Started it, loved it. A lot of people were like, hey, this kid's talented. He could go really far. It was also kind of we didn't have so much money. My mom was a single mom, didn't have a college education, so we were pretty broke all the time, so traveling for us was always kind of never really much of a possibility. Suddenly I started getting all these scholarships to attend ballet schools around the world, and I was like, okay, wow, this could be really interesting. So it really got me out of Utah and Salt Lake City, which is kind of it's a great state, great city, love it, but it's far out there. It's still a lot of mountains and cactuses and which is beautiful, but when you're a ballet dancer, you just feel like, you're a million miles away from New York and Paris, yeah, and London, where ballet really thrives. I started doing really well. I got my first job in New York City with American Ballet Theatre, which is one of the top ballet companies around the world. I started dancing everywhere. I joined Pacific Northwest Ballet for a little while, which is a really great up-and-coming company in Seattle. Then later joined the Dutch National Ballet here in Amsterdam, where I'm currently living, which is also one of the top ballet companies in the world. I became a principal dancer, which is sort of the lead guy. I was the dude out there partnering the prima ballerinas. I had a phenomenal career. I danced with many of the top ballet companies around the world, many of the top prima ballerinas of all the major companies. I danced in many major opera houses, Moscow, London, Paris, New York, everything, San Francisco. I just had a phenomenal career and I loved it. Ballet has been my life. It's my family. It's my friends. It's my connections. It's just been a wonderful, wonderful experience. And then, about 4 years ago, I decided it was time to retire. You get to a certain point where you're like not as flexible, you can't do splits anymore. Can't quite jump as high as you used to. So all these younger kids that were just recovering faster than I was after a hard performance, and I was like, okay, time to figure out what I'm gonna do next. So I took a long time and decided to just take a year off of life, and I just went traveling because I just love to travel. While I was traveling, I decided, I've got a skill. I've been a top ballet dancer for many years, and I was traveling to countries like India and places and where ballet is really not very well known, or you wouldn't think that there would be any ballet schools there. But I noticed there was actually quite a few, and the more I looked, I found that there were ballet schools in every country, and the people there were really starved for experience, for people to come and teach and give them some knowledge. They wanted to build ballet schools and companies in their countries. They just didn't have people that had the experience and the knowledge and everything. And like myself as a kid out in the desert of Utah, they felt very distant from the mainstream ballet world. And they felt very much like they were on the fringe. And so I decided to start a project called Ballet Rising, which is all about the rising popularity of ballet around the world in places you would least expect, and we're just trying to sort of bring people in the community from the edges in, and create a better communication between people on the edges and the people at the center to sort of help the art form thrive and grow and to be more inclusive and just help people around the world understand and appreciate art and dance. So yeah, that's kind of where I am today.
Oh, that's great. So this podcast was kind of born out of an initiative called Grant for the Web. For listeners who don't know, that's a kind of big web monetization fund backed by some really interesting people, but it is kind of based on blockchain technology. So it'd be good to hear how you, a kind of hardcore ballet dancer guy, ended up looking into crypto and kind of getting interested in web monetization.
Yeah, it's kind of a funny story. right about the same time I was studying Ballet Rising, I was retiring from ballet. I'd heard of Bitcoin before, and I was always kind of like, okay, I think it was back in like 2013 or 14, you know, you hear that it was kind of up and coming, it was this thing. And I immediately thought like, all right, you know, if it's gone that far, it must be something. It can't just be magic internet money. but I didn't really get into it until after the bull run of 2017, actually. I'd seen a little documentary and I thought, okay, I've always wanted to dive in and learn about it and see what it's all about. But just never took the time to do it until my brother found a couple of his acquaintances. They were, I guess, trading cryptocurrencies or something, but they were like, oh, you know, give us a little bit of your money and we'll, you know, give you a nice return on it. It turned out to be a total joke. We never saw a dime after that. I mean, fortunately, we didn't put very much money into it.
Yeah.
We also kind of went into it thinking, okay, this could be a total bust. So let's, you know, what my brother and I did is like, we just basically said, let's really learn about this market, learn about this technology.
Mm.
And if we need to pull our money out real quick, then we can do it. You know, let's see where this market is going. And, you know, I mean, you know how it goes. It's just one step from there. It's the Bitcoin rabbit hole. And then, you know, for me, Bitcoin itself was just really revolutionary and interesting, even for somebody who has no background in finance or technology.
Yeah.
You can look at it and go, wow, you know, that could be fascinating. And then, of course, you know, you learn about Ethereum and smart contracts. And it was just like, boom, holy cow, this is a whole world. So. I just got really excited about it and I started noticing a lot of different things that I think could be really, really advantageous for the performing arts, and things just kind of snowballed from there. So that led into web monetization.
Yep.
Obviously, you know, I got into XRP and Ripple. I was kind of interested in what they were doing. And obviously you hear about Interledger. Okay, what's this Interledger thing? And I think I was teaching down in Brazil, actually, down in Rio de Janeiro. I was filming a little documentary about some ballet schools in the favelas who were offering free ballet classes for kids in the favelas. And they said, yeah, we're going to be offering a grant for people to experiment with web monetization. And I thought, great. You know, they were like, we're looking for all types of content creators and stuff. I said, okay, it's time to bring ballet and crypto and blockchain together through Interledger, essentially. Mm. So, I was just gung-ho from day one, interested in figuring out how it works and how we can experiment with it and how I can pull the performing arts into the Internet of Value.
Yeah. So, yeah, you kind of got that grant, as did we. What are you kind of planning to do with it? So how does that kind of the Interledger, the grant web monetization fit with ballet? Like, how do you see that working? Or what are you doing with the money, I suppose?
What we're doing right now is basically just monetizing the content that we're creating. So yep. So Ballet Rising is very much it's a cultural project. You know, it's all about the culture of ballet and bringing the culture together and bringing communities together and helping communities understand dance and the importance of dance. Blah 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 blah. But we're using technology. We're using the grant to experiment. So for me, I'm gonna we're just basically taking the content that we're creating, and we're experimenting with it. Okay, how does it work? And also trying to use it as a tool to educate the performing arts ecosystem, dancers, choreographers, ballet companies, opera companies, about the technology and the potential that it has to really revolutionize web payments. And so we're doing that. But then what I ultimately want to do is take a lot of the research that we're doing, and we're already starting to create, this is a totally separate project. This will be a technology project that wants to, so yeah, Ballet Rising is a cultural project that uses technology. We're going to create a technology project for the performing arts, for culture.
Amazing, yeah.
And ultimately what I'd really like to do is, and we just started laying the groundwork for it, is to create a streaming platform for performing arts companies and artists to monetize their performances on the web. So historically speaking, the performing arts are always the last to get into technology. You know, it's sort of like we're the antithesis of technology. Yeah. We're like a 400-year-old art form that's changed very little.
Yeah.
How people consume our art form has changed very little over the past, you know, 400 years as well, or how many years, you know. Theater is basically is just theater. You know, it, being a sports fan as well, my entire life, I looked at how sports teams and leagues and just they would, how they market themselves and how they use technology, how they reach out to new fan bases, you know. It always pissed me off, the fact that I could get on my phone and watch my favorite football team anywhere in the world. But if I want to watch my favorite ballet company, you've got to get a ticket, get a hotel room and fly to that city. Why not? You know? Yeah. Okay. There are reasons. It's not like people are just being stupid, but I think that the reasons are slowly fading. And now with COVID-19, it's just gone. Every ballet and opera company in the world right now is streaming their content. The problem is that they're streaming it all for free, which does one thing. It's great because we're finally connecting with fans around the world, you know? So finally, after how many centuries can a fan in, say, Bolivia, if they're a big fan of the Paris Opera Ballet, now they can get online and they can watch it. You know, you don't have to fly to Paris, you know. Now, you know, the problem really is how are they going to monetize that content? You know, they can't just keep giving it away for free. They're all, you know, most of these opera companies and ballet companies, they're in big trouble right now financially because of COVID. Opera houses are closed, you know, there's just no performances happening. And so that's why we're moving everything into the digital world. But how to pay for it, how to monetize it is a big problem. And I've spoken to a lot of directors and artistic choreographers and people, and everyone has sort of these workarounds of how they're doing it, but nobody's happy with it. And so what I want to do ultimately is create a streaming platform that really enables performing arts companies to stream their content and engage with fans around the world and do it in an economically viable way that is smooth for them and easy for the consumers as well. Something that really brings people together to share in the art form.
Yeah, and I'll just kind of following on from that, I think where in the past, maybe you're relying on advertising to generate revenue on existing ones where they're giving it out free sort of thing. For me personally, when I'm in a theater or something, I'm kind of in the zone. And then if I get like a YouTube style ad that just goes, bam, now there's an advert. I'm just like, it would just break the whole suspense. Like it's kind of hard enough recreating that intensity, that immersion as it is. And that's probably a problem in itself, but then, you know, coupling it with the existing web models of, you know, adverts that, I can't imagine that working too well.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, the main thing is there's a couple of streaming platforms that allows, there's one for Broadway and there's another one that's trying to be sort of the Netflix of the performing arts.
Okay.
But the problem is that these are, you know, you got the subscription problem right there, you know. I've already got a Netflix subscription. I don't have that much money. I wish New York Times would drop their paywall, you know. Subscription fatigue is a massive one for me, and you know, so I just really want to sort of figure out how we can get around that. I don't want to have to force people into that subscription. But the biggest thing, and this is what I've heard from a lot of artistic directors, is that, okay, finally, after hundreds of years, we finally said, okay, streaming is good, but it has to lead people from the web into the opera houses. And so if you have something like a Netflix where it's just, it's content that's up there for everyone to consume and binge, how does that coordinate with what they're doing in the opera house? And how much value does the ballet company get out of that? Probably not. I don't think it's very much. So it, it all of that content that's on that siloed website doesn't work with everything else. And so what I really want to do is create a platform that works more like a gallery, like an art gallery, that has, you know, where the directors can program their digital season and make that coordinate and work with the real season that's happening on the real stage, so it can act sort of like a funnel to eventually bring people into the opera houses. And I think there's probably a couple applications for web monetization in that, but still in the research phase.
And I imagine, I suppose going back to your point about being a sports fan, that, that probably has holds a lot of keys, because I imagine in the beginning these guys were quite resistant, you know, we need fans in the stadium, and I wonder how far they've got with it. Like, I mean, putting aside maybe rebroadcasting rights and that sort of stuff, but
I mean you look at any of the revenue from all of the major sports teams around the world, and only a fraction of their revenue actually comes from ticket sales. Same with ballet and opera, you know, whereas sports get a lot of their revenue from the streaming rights and the television rights and all that stuff, and sponsors as a result of having billions of fans rather than just the small number that can fit in the stadium. Ballet is the same, except the lost revenue from the ticket sales comes from governments and government donations and private donations, which is another whole another area that I'm going to work towards in the future.
Sounds like you've got a lot to get on with then. Well, you want to go big or go home, sort of thing. So I think just wrapping up, like, you know, what outside of what we've probably talked about today, like, what is your favorite, like, non-crypto project or crypto project outside of, you know, Grant for the Web and XRP and stuff?
Yeah, geez, I was trying to give that some really good thought there, but non-crypto projects. I think, well, there's most of the projects that I'm, you know, I've been diving deep into this for quite a while now. So yeah, my brain is just really in that mode. But there's a lot of really interesting projects that aren't necessarily crypto themselves, like Interledger, you know. Ledger is not a crypto, it's not even a blockchain, it's just a web protocol, but it works obviously in tandem. So I think there's a lot of really interesting projects, like the Baseline protocol that the Ethereum Enterprise Alliance is working on in coordination with Chainlink and Unibrite.
I haven't come across that. That sounds, what's the premise? Baselink, is it called?
Baseline.
Yeah. Baseline, okay.
They want to use the Ethereum mainnet, the public blockchain, as middleware. And I'm not the one to really get into that too deep. I'm a ballet dancer, remember?
Yeah, two non-tech people here.
I'm reading, it's really cool. But, you know, I think something else I've been meaning to do a deep dive into is like PayID, you know, which itself is not a blockchain as well, but it works for coordination. I think that's a really cool project. And I'm really interested to dive into that. So I'm sure I'll think of some other stuff as soon as this interview is done.
Yeah.
Those are some quick things that come to mind.
No, that's great to hear. And it'll be exciting seeing where you guys go. So that's it for today. Thanks for tuning in to Just a Meme, where we talk about the future of making money on the web, whether that's art, sports, random crypto stuff. Please do get involved, give us a like, send some comments, a review, and also please subscribe and check out the next session. We really want this to be kind of a force for good here. And I think people like Casey here show that we can really do some amazing stuff. So great having you, Casey, and thank you for your time.
Yeah, thanks so much. Great talking to you.
Okay, see ya.
Ciao. Okay.